Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Megan.
And I'm Deidre. And today we are discussing Sabbath rest. Interesting, because you actually just did a series on your Instagram, Enneagram Megan account. And I really am intrigued by this concept. I think for me, rest is hard. And so I've never done it well. I grew up as a pastor's kid and Sundays were crazy. I did not associate rest with the way Sundays worked for us. And especially as I became an adult and had babies and still had to be at church early, it was a very stressful day.
Yeah, I think Sundays are like the worst day, like in terms of soul rest, because when I was a kid, I swear to you that that was the day my family was always in a fight trying to get us kids out the door and mm-hmm. on time and dressed, and no, you can't wear this, and no, you have to wear that, and you have to look nice for church and go back and comb your hair. And then as a parent, same, like getting everybody fed and clothed presentably and out the door on time. Like, I cannot remember a Sunday from my childhood where we weren't all just tense in the car on the drive to church because everybody was angry. And let's be honest, a lot of times as an adult too.
Well, and I just remember, I'd say about 30 years of my life, I was at church 2 hours early, you know, like it was just a whole day. And when I was younger, church services lasted a lot longer too. So it was like 8 a.m. to 1 or 2, maybe by the time you got home, some kind of lunch or event afterward, you know, we would try to schedule lunches or meetings or small groups. They were just long days. And I just would feel like coming home so tired. And then
Sunday night church.
And we would go back for that. So I don't associate the way that I grew up observing Sunday worship as Sabbath and rest. And I never found a rhythm of that. Like when I was in high school, you're running all the time. You got all the extracurricular stuff that go every night, all the weekends. Then you get into college, you've got events that are always happening. Work, you have to work when you're not in school. So you're working on the weekends, and then you have kids and they're keeping you running all the time.
Right. Kids don't give a Sabbath rest to their parents. Like, you don't just get like 12 to 24 hours off of being a parent.
That's right. But I do think that the principle is God worked and then he rested, and his seventh day became like our first day. So we begin from a place of rest, resting in the work that he's already done and recognizing that the work he has already done is enough for our sustenance. And then from there, we begin our work week. So I'm not
it's like we're entering from a place then of like recognition and humility, as opposed to a place of arrogance and pride that it all is on our shoulders to do whatever it is. Like, if we're entering from his shoulders instead, resting on the work he's already done, it just changes our perspective of it. Yeah, I've never heard it put like that, actually.
I really think that's the principle that I learned growing up. And shout out to my mom. She would have taught that way, you know, that we rest in the work he's done, and it becomes a place of worship for us to acknowledge that life flows from him, that all good things flow from him, that, again, our sustenance, all that we have need of is his. And then from there, we steward what he's given us the next 6 days, you know, and go into. So like you said, we're not creating from nothing. Only the creator creates from nothing. But we get to steward what he gives us. It's the same principle as like a tithe or an offering. It's acknowledging that all wealth is his wealth. And so by giving that back to him, it positions our heart to say, now I'm stewarding what you've entrusted to me. So I think that the position of where we're starting from, like you said, is humility, and it's from a place of worship. And I would say that in that regard, I would say Sundays were a time of worship and putting God back in the rightful place in our life, where my perspective is shifted back to him instead of the work of my own hands. So in that regard, I feel like I probably did grow up observing that principle.
Yeah.
But rest is kind of a different conversation to me, because no matter what I do, if I don't keep him where he needs to be in my life, I get in that hamster wheel that we all get on, especially in a very capitalistic Western society where you can produce all day long and get raises and get more things and acquire more things. And you're still always like chasing that carrot on the stick. Like, you're never going to make it. The hamster wheel keeps going and you're just always running. And I know you use two metaphors there, but you get the point. You never attain the thing you're running after. So the posture of rest and the concept of Sabbath from that is very interesting to me, especially as a one who is so an Enneagram one who is so doing oriented. Because I will do from the time I wake up till I go to bed. Like there are days I have to remind myself, this is Saturday. You do have things to do, but you can also sit down. Like that's just hard for me. I have to remind myself of that.
I want to come back to that because as a four, I don't understand that at all, and I have the exact opposite. This is why I created a series about it. But I was just gonna say, like, I think that's a beautiful principle of like how God intended it. But even our secular society, I don't know when it happened, but when we switched from like an agrarian to an industrial society, at some point, people, unions, whatever it was, recognized that people could actually be more productive when they were given rest. That's when 5-day work weeks came in, 40-hour work weeks. You know, there were limits put around how long someone could work at a certain time for the pay, simply because they recognized that without rest, it would be worse for people. It would be worse for productivity, for production, for really the output was of the factory. It's interesting. I actually work for a company now that has unlimited time off, and that to me, it kind of blows my mind. Like, how does that work? I mentioned it to my daughter the other day, my 8-year-old, and she said, "Can you just take every day off for like a year, mom, and just play?" And I was like, "Well, I don't think so." And she's like, "Well, it says unlimited." And I was like, "You know, that's kind of fascinating. Like, I don't really know what the regulations are, but what they have found and why more companies are going to this is that when people know they have access to it actually gives them more productive and restful ways to engage with the work that they do. Because they know they can rest when they need to. They have the permission, they have the resource to do so, and therefore they show up in a different way in their work that they do.
Yeah, that's good. You become more focused on what is the goal that I have to get to, and whatever it looks like to get to that in a healthy way, then I have more creative energy to put towards it. I'm not stretched so thin. I think we make a lot of mistakes when we're rushing and hurrying for deadlines too. Not that you don't have deadlines. I mean, you do, but yeah, it's a really different mindset. There's someone on Instagram that I follow. I think you do too, but
Bishop.
the Nap Bishop. Yes.
Yeah.
She's amazing. She has taken this concept of rest as a stand. It's an active stand for her against like the tyranny of commercial productivity and this system that we live in that requires our bodies to always be working to produce something for this bigger system. And it's really interesting her take on that. But yeah, she just really feels like it is an active resistance to nap, to take
Yeah.
pause in the day to remind ourselves that we are not machines. And also, I think if we go back to the biblical Sabbath, remind ourselves that we are not God.
Yeah.
We are limited, and it is within, I don't remember who said this, I want to say Richard Rohr, but it is within knowing and understanding our limits that we actually have more awareness and productivity and a healthier internal world because of that.
It's really good.
We don't understand it. We're exhausting ourselves trying to be somebody or something we're not.
That's really good. And the problem, though, like we started this saying, is if we can understand the need and recognize the need for this rest, and you know, whether it's an act of resistance against consumerism or in productivity, or whether it's just that our bodies literally will demand it of us if we don't give it to us to ourselves. I still think that it's hard to say, let me take a whole Sunday or a whole Saturday, or if you know, a whole Wednesday, whatever it is, let me take a whole 24 hours and just do nothing. Like that in itself would be a huge act of resistance against our society. And if people find a way to do that, like that's amazing. It's not super realistic, especially if you have small children, especially depending on the kind of work that you do. I also don't know if a specific regulated framework is the right way to engage in a principle of rest, if it becomes a bondage of rules for ourselves. Because
Like
what happens is is we go, we, oh, well, we can't, I can't set aside a whole Saturday, so I just won't Sabbath. I just don't practice Sabbath. I can't practice Sabbath. And then we have no practice of rest in our lives because we think we're not doing it right.
And we see in Jesus' time how he came and started messing with how the religious leaders were following that to the letter of the law, to so many specific case study kinds of letter of the law, where they were upset with him for healing someone on the Sabbath. And he's like, what do you think my father's work is about? You know, that was to the glory of the Father, which is what Sabbath rest is, you know, to look to the one who does heal and create life and sustain us. He's like, you guys are you're missing the point here. But yeah, I think it's interesting to put this in the context of how does my personality engage in rest? Because like you said, it's not hard for you to maybe sit down where I'm not sitting, but in other ways you're practicing it in, or I'm practicing it ways that you aren't, or vice versa. So we all kind
Right,
of
like
have these.
sorry, but it doesn't bother me to sit down in the middle of the day and read a book for an hour, but am I practicing Sabbath or am I just taking a break from my duties? So I would say that a Sabbath practice for me has to be like more intentional time to really focus on what is the soul rest that I need? How am I engaging with the Lord? How am I engaging with my who I am and who I was created to be? It has to be more intentional time, not just like laying on a couch. Because I can lay on a couch, but I don't feel like I'm Sabbathing. Can I use that as a verb?
I say you can Latinize anything.
So anyway, that's why I created this Instagram series because I was like, ones, you need to learn how to sit down. Fours, we probably need to get our butts up and do something different.
What is right for one is not necessarily right for the other, even though the principle is the same. Yes.
Exactly.
Okay,
Yeah.
so why don't you talk about ones? Because I feel like you described it really well, and I'm still working on implementing this in my life.
Well, I really wanted to get at the nuance of each Enneagram type. So I kind of laid out what here are three suggestions of how each type could practice Sabbath. And I went for things that would pull up their repressed center a little bit. I went for things that get them out of that dominant spiral of whatever that is, whether it's feeling for fours or unproductive thinking for ones or anything like that. And then things that just would, like, what I thought would just feed their soul in terms of growth steps for them based on like what makes them thrive. So that's kind of where I framed it all. So for ones, ones, the reason it's hard for ones to rest at all, even like to sit down, it's because that inner critic is always telling you, keep going, keep going. You're going to run out of time. Keep going, or you're not, everyone's going to see you didn't make the to-do list. So
Yeah.
for ones, I think the most important Sabbath practice you can find is to figure out a way to silence that inner critic in a way that's healthy. Not by going to an extreme seven space, right, with overdoing something, overeating, over thrill seeking or whatever, but is it through worship? Is it through journaling? Is it through a walk? Whatever it takes to silence that inner critic is going to be the best Sabbath practice for a one, I believe.
Yeah. I agree.
What have you found that silences that critic for you?
Definitely being able to do something while I'm tuning in. So the last couple of times I've tried to set aside time to really intentionally have like worship and prayer time, I started by driving or walking so that my body was doing something, because it's really hard to still my body and my mind at the same time. I feel like
Yeah.
that is like slamming on the brakes after I've been going 60. I don't downshift that quickly. So for me, it was like, okay, how can I get in my body, but in a meaningful way that isn't tasking and being productive? And then it's like after about a half hour, hour of that, I'm ready to actually like start thinking, using that repressed center, right, to think productively about how the Lord is speaking to me, or how I'm praying starts to change, or I'm more comfortable with silence at that point. It's like I have to
Good.
get this certain frenetic energy out of my body first. So you can usually can start that with like worship, or I used to dance. Like that was a good way to do that, dance to worship music or something, because I got my body involved in a way that was leading me toward rest.
I think you mentioned the silence is hard to not just because you're battling your inner critic, but because your thoughts start spiraling into to-do lists and tasks, right?
Yes.
So, how do you untangle your thoughts out in a way that can leave room for silence? And so, one of my suggestions for ones is to actually if you are alone or with someone you trust, like speak out the thoughts, get them out, maybe journal them, write them down on paper, and then throw the paper away so that it's just out of your brain, untangled, and put aside for whatever that purpose is. Maybe taking notes on your phone or something. And then finally, the thing I would say to ones, and probably this will be for threes as well, and maybe even eights, is that a full day, like a 24-hour day, is really, really hard. So maybe that can be an end goal. Maybe once you're an empty nester, maybe once life has, carved out some time, but maybe what really needs to Sabbath you is, I'm gonna keep verbing that word, is to set aside Sabbath rest throughout every day. Also, because honestly, you guys can wear yourself out in one day. You don't need a whole week to wear yourself out. You ones just go, go, go. So you need some Sabbath practices that slow you down every single day and pull you back into your body.
Yeah, I get that right now with my drive to work. I thought that one of the reasons I would be sad about taking this job, that's probably not the right word, but one of the reasons I might be find it
Hesitant.
hesitant to take this job, even though it's what I really wanted to do, was it added so much drive time to my week. But it's been really good because it's forcing me to spend time in worship and prayer in a way that when I'm at home, it's hard to not keep picking up, cleaning up, switching laundry, doing this, doing that, seeing crumbs, just all the little things, or just the fact that the house is full and people are always talking or whatever. So that's been helpful too. But I agree with the like journaling or writing it out. I've even been asking the Lord, like, let me hear what you're saying to me. And as I write it, it's like these words come. I'm not hearing it audibly, but it's like I'm sorting out what I'm thinking and feeling and fearing and how he's speaking to that fear
Good.
as I'm doing it. And so that's been kind of a way to get my thinking involved in a way that is productive.
That's good. Well, speaking of repressed thinking types, twos are another one of those. So, some of the practices for them, I started with the same one, untangle your feelings on paper. And for twos, I didn't really give them the option to speak it to someone else because another big part of Sabbath practice for twos is to spend intentional time alone. Who are you when you're all alone and by yourself? Who does God say you are? How do you relate to God when it's not about somebody else? And so, spending some of that time getting those feelings out on paper or just speaking them out loud to the Lord, but not in the presence of other people, it's going to be so meaningful to twos.
Yeah, I think we read the Christopher Hurwitz book, The Sacred Enneagram, and so he has some of those kinds of practices in there where stillness, solitude, and silence are all like these things that different stances need for different reasons. So when twos are so focused on the needs of others, it's hard for them to be in a room with anybody else and be able to look inward and also tune their ear to God. So what they'll do is they'll be great prayer warriors for somebody else. You know, they'll hear from God for someone else, but can they do that for themselves? And so I think that is a really important factor for them to get alone. And that can be scary, but you're not alone because you're with the Lord. You really are. Like he is present with you. And I think that taking that posture of having a relational moment, Bible reading can be really like daunting to people because it feels like I have to study this and it becomes this assignment to do. But if you're like, you know, I just want to read something I've never read before and hear and meet Jesus in this moment, it becomes relational. And if that is too hard of a starting point, then sit down and journal what you're thinking about, and then let him share with you what he thinks about you, you know, or start with worship music. There's so many ways to do that. But maybe going cold turkey silence right at the beginning might be too hard for twos like it is for ones. So I agree. Journaling, music, doing something with all of those tangled up thoughts until you can start kind of sorting them out a bit and let him speak to you about your worth and value.
That's what I was going to say. And twos, like, spend the time, like, God is there, but you're with yourself too, and start enjoying your own company and start getting to know who you are through what God has to say about you, but also through IFS work, which is another way that we let the Lord speak to us. And twos need, we all need, but twos especially need to practice boundary setting in their life just to have really healthy relationships and healthy relationship with themselves. And so getting alone and spending this time and getting to know themselves is what's going to help them determine what is a healthy boundary for me. What is the yes I'm being called to, and what is the no I need to start saying? And so this alone time is really going to help them kind of determine that, and practicing those things will be a huge step.
And it's been a bit since I dropped Dr. Brené Brown's name, but you know what she says, the most empathetic people, which twos would want to be, have the healthiest boundaries. See what I did there?
Nice. Nice.
Okay, I have an idea though that is going to kind of span here between twos and threes because they both have some trouble being alone with their identity and feelings. So I use this word with one of my daughters about splunking. You know, like when you go mine, you're not mining in a cave, that's mining, but like you're going to explore a cave. They call that splunking. Like you're going down into the
I mean,
depths.
I'm not, but yes.
No. Yeah, no, I'm not either. That's terrifying. Way too claustrophobic for this example. But go with me on the ex exploration and the joy of the play of that. The word says that our hearts are just will be deceptive to us. Like they, what is, I just forgot
What?
the scripture that your heart is deceitfully wicked above all, blah, blah, blah. How I have been seeing that lately is that the heart will be self-protective, and in doing so, will put things it needs to protect behind closed doors. So it becomes a place that looks scary, and it becomes a place that harbors lies and secrets, right? And these are the breeding ground where wicked behaviors can flow from, because we'll do whatever we have to keep some doors locked or to keep some things hidden.
Well, just having the act of having our doors locked keeps us fragmented.
Yes. But what if we say, as the psalmist did, Lord, search my heart and know me? And we go on this journey in these quiet times with the Lord, when we're Sabbathing, when we're spending time with him, where we're splunking these parts of our heart that have been closed up and look so dark. It's like if I have a map of my heart and I'm like, well, this is what I know about me, and this is what other people know about me, and this is something I see sometimes, and this is something I kind of every once in a while remember that I like. But then on the map, there's like 17 big black marks that I don't know what those areas are called. I've never explored them. And twos and threes especially are really scared to go there, because what will they find of their own identity and their own feelings? So it's just me saying, why don't you consider part of your Sabbath a splunking expedition with the Lord?
And this will surprise no one at all, but I am married to an Enneagram 6, and he's got some headlamps that you just kind of strap around your head, with like the light on them, if anyone wants to borrow those to go spelunking.
Okay, I don't know why I needed to share that, but there you have it. Let's move on to threes, because that was my segue to them.
Yeah, so some of the scary part for threes is that alone time, but that's really what threes have to do is extended time to be unproductive. They're always focused on tasks and goals. So how do you, if part of Sabbath is to pull our focus of attention away from our natural focus of attention and onto who God is and who he says we are,
Say that again.
then if Sabbath, let's redefine it to be taking our focus of attention away from our natural Enneagram lensed focus of attention and pulling it onto who God is and who he says we are. Then for a three who's always focused on tasks and goals, they have got to figure out how to be unproductive for a time.
Yeah. That's why I'm giving them permission to explore with the Lord. That gives them a goal, that gives them a task to do with him. They're exploring the parts of their heart that they've not explored before. And then God speaks to that worth and value where he breathes on it.
It's play. Yeah, it's not productive. Productivity. I can't say that word. But I think that's funny because the third thing I put for them was to lean into a creative way of connecting with the Lord. And I feel like that spelunking, like that imaginative game, is that creative way. It could be a creative way. Maybe it's writing music. Maybe it is something that feels productive, but it's a creative connection. They're not performing it for God, they're performing it with God and
Yes.
whatever that looks like. It's not something that should be shared. Or I know your daughter has shared on here that her whole freshman year of college, she basically just filled up journal after journal with poetry and songs and all of this beautiful time that she had Sabbathed with God. And none of it was for consumption outward. It was between her and the Lord. And it was creative and it was just her time with him.
And that pronoun, I'm sorry, not pronoun, the shift there for you to say from doing for him to doing with him.
Preposition.
Preposition. Thank you. No, start with a P. The prepositional shift from for God to with God is a huge Sabbath shift. because you're making this a relational connection to the creator who is innately just so beautifully creative. So of course that expression of worship there is going to be creative as well, but you don't have to be creative for him or producing for him or even doing for him. It's good.
The other thing for threes is, although they need that alone time, they also need to understand how they can be like real. So if they find someone they really trust that can mirror back to them maybe what's going on inside of them, that's going to help them go spelunking sometimes too, because threes have a tendency to put on the image they think is expected. But if they can figure out who to trust to get in front of and just strip bare, then that's going to be a Sabbath practice for them as well.
That's good. All right, here we are to Enneagram 4.
You want to talk about fours since I talked about ones?
Can I put my glasses on?
I've got mine on.
Well, this first one is funny to me that you wrote this because it's find a way to connect to God through nature.
That is funny because I went outside today to like sit in the beautiful spring. I mean, it's summer, but it feels like spring air today. And within about 2 minutes, there was a spider crawling across my leg, and I flicked it off and I went inside and I went, the problem with nature is that it's too naturey.
Why does it have to be so naturey? Well, we've talked a little bit in our embodiment conversations about how fours are very disembodied often because you are already feeling like you're missing something. And so you're always looking for where that missing thing is. Speaking of focus of attentions, right? What is missing? So it's sometimes you're looking internally to figure it out, like what is the missing piece? But then you're looking, you really are looking externally. So, is this it? Is that it? Was it this person? Is it this thing? Is it this dream? Is it this creative endeavor or this new job or whatever? So, I think that it's really important to find ways to get in your body, and nature has a way of doing that. It also changes your perspective.
Yeah, it pulls us out from all of the introspection and makes us see that we're connected to something bigger than us and that the universe is more than just whatever turmoil we're feeling inside of our chest that day.
Your inner universe. Yeah. You can get really lost. You don't need to be encouraged to go spelunking. You do that all the time.
All the time.
Your encouragement is to look up at the mountain, look out at the
Yeah.
ocean, look at the big trees, look at the way that the sun is shining. Like,
Literally look at the light. We're always looking at the blackness, so we need to look at the light.
and when you do, that's another way. It's a four's way of putting the perspective back on the creator, back on God, right? There is something really paradoxical about how awe and wonder of something bigger than us right sizes us. And I've been thinking about that for some reason this last week. Like,
As also quoted by Brené Brown in Atlas of the Heart.
also, yes, I haven't read that in a while, but you're right, it's back in there. But standing in front of something that makes you feel insignificant actually implies a significance. It's like there's a safety then. Like the whole world is not running on whether you figure it out or not, you know? And yet it's also so humbling to think that the God of such a great and vast universe wants to draw close to you and wants to know you for you to be known by him. That is so beautiful.
It's like that Louis Giglio talk that we used to show to the kids at school all the time, that was like, if the earth was the size of a golf ball, and then it like puts all of the universe in perspective and like this like the most infinitesimal tiny speck that we are. Pronouncing words is not my strength. All right. Anyway, yes, connecting to God with nature and intentional embodiment through breathing, which we've talked about a lot here, or some kind of exercise or grounding or whatever.
Yeah, engaging your body that way. And then writing or speaking aloud all that you are thankful for. And again, I think that practice of gratitude is so important because that's where you're looking for what you have. It turns the focus away from what is missing.
Yeah, it's looking for the light again. So I like that. We should have had this conversation before I created the series, and I probably could have summed everything up in like better little sentences, like go spelunking, look for the light. Like it would have been such a cute little series.
You're welcome. No, you did all this work. I'm just like giving my little two cents on the back end.
Like it.
All right, Enneagram 5.
So fives, like four, are in that withdrawing stance. So they're probably a little bit more disconnected from their gut intuition body center. So engaging their bodies in something that, in their way of looking for the light, is pulling themselves out of their analytical side and into something that's going to be a little bit more playful or fun. So that's kind of their practice to how they should engage their body in something Sabbath, and that will Sabbath rest. And in that same way, I put delight in something unexpected. And that's a way of looking for delight in the things that catch them off guard.
Yes, I love
Because
that.
they're so concerned about their energy and where it's going and how to measure it out and will I have enough? Then a surprise is the thing that uses up all of their energy for a day. But what if they can find a delight in something that surprises them?
What was the thing that you sent me earlier today that was a spam message?
Oh, somebody was like, it's so pressure to meet you.
So pressured. So I read that to one of the fives I know, and she immediately started laughing. She's like, "That's how I feel every time I meet a new person."
It's a pressure to meet you.
it's a pressure to meet you. And she's like, "I think I'm gonna say that sometime." She thought that was so funny. So I was like, "Yeah, I thought that you would get that." Like, everything that requires energy ends up being just another source of draining, which is why their focus of attention is gathering. So
Yeah.
can they shift from I'm not prepared for this, I need to gather for this, to delight in this unexpected thing? And I think that that's their form of finding the light, like you said.
And the other thing I put for fives, they have a little bit of the opposite problem of twos. Fives are good at isolating. So fives can practice Sabbath in the context of community, I think. I think that's a good practice for them. How can they experience the goodness of God with others?
That's good. Yeah, I love these. They're so good. But that word delight, I love it. Fives, delight in something. Delight yourself in the Lord. He has good gifts for you. All right, here we got sixes. Coming up, rounding up the last three. Well, we have another one in the dependent
That would
stance.
be four, but okay.
Oh, what?
We have six, seven, eight, and nine.
Oh, I can't count. My bad. Sorry.
We know this.
You think getting to nine wouldn't be that hard?
It's not 10. It throws you off. It's an
All
odd number.
right. So the first thing we're going to say to them is spend time in scripture without a commentary or study. So one of the things we want to do is get to the heart of this self-doubt that you have and that need for guidance, and find that there is security in trusting yourself and trusting that you can hear from God. You can hear from
Yeah.
God. You don't have to go through a committee of people to know if it is right or wrong to hear from God. So spending that alone time, it's a different way of being alone, right?
It is. It's a way of being alone to trust yourself, not to find your worth or not to explore yourself, but to start saying, I can discern God's voice. I can hear it. I don't need to go through someone else's words.
Yeah. And I love this idea for them to also explore creativity, in worship, you know, if that's dance, art, song, writing, some kind of creative form, because they are thinking, well, dominant and repressed, they really get caught up in that thinking sometimes. So this can help unwind that and give them an outlet that bypasses the thinking that can get a little trapped and sticky sometimes. So finding ways, it's like we're saying to fours to embody it. It's almost like finding an outlet that bypasses thinking some, like get straight to the creativity from an emotion and getting
And
emotional.
also be Oh yeah, and also because sixes share that line with three, but they tend to go into this frenzy of stressed activity when they get to that three space. What if they could tap into that like creative productivity of a three instead? I
Yeah.
think it just is, it's a different choice on that line.
I like what you say here too, to habitually remember times when God was faithful. It reminds me of how he came to the Israelites and said, bind this on your forehead, bind it on your garments, on your wrist, on the front of your, like on your door. So every time you walk in and out of the house, you're seeing that I am your God. And like, I've got this, I've got you. It's just such a reminder to us to, again, the Sabbath practice, looking back to God. When they want to look to all the commentators, all the other people who are the experts, all the people where they can gather their data and resources to find their safety and security, God is like, just remember that I'm faithful. And even if you find yourself alone without the guidance of someone else, I'm always with you. I'm always guiding you.
I think it's that idea of the memorial stone, to write these down and to save them so that your children know what these are, so that your grandchildren know what these are, so that you remind yourself, because If sixes are present focused, but that little committee in their brain is always thinking about the future, then what is keeping them? They're not ever looking to the past to remind them and go, oh, I don't have to be afraid of now because yesterday God did this. I don't need to be afraid of tomorrow because last year God did this. And so it's a way of finding that safety and the security in his faithfulness through those memorial stones instead of always worrying about what could come.
Yeah, that's good. He is the I am, which means he will be the I am of what you need in that moment. So it's good reminders. Seven.
Sevens. I really just was picturing every seven I've ever met and thinking, do I think I could get a seven to sit down for a full hour and read a Bible passage or a devotional? And most sevens I know have just a lot of energy and sometimes a short attention span. So I thought a really good practice for them might be to engage in lots of different kinds of ways of connecting with God. So maybe it's movement, maybe it's writing, maybe it's listening, maybe it's worship, maybe it's praying, maybe they're going back and forth between a lot of these different ones because their attention span, they know it's going to like go with it, right? If it's a short attention span, just go with it.
Yeah. Don't make yourself sit for an hour to write. You can start with writing and 5 minutes in, switch to
Right.
swimming. Yeah.
If their focus is planning for pleasurable possibilities, then what if they focus that on the next pleasurable possibility of connecting with God?
That's good.
Anyway.
Although with everyone else, we wanted them to shift their focus to a different focus.
Yeah. So that's why I went into the next one, which is
Okay.
set a goal to achieve. So this is something long term, so
That's good.
that their short attention span in the moment isn't distracting them from whatever that long-term goal might be. So it's the disciplined practice of returning to the same thing over and over and over, even if it feels boring or routine, in order to achieve the long-term goal of it.
That's good. And maybe reading the Bible in a year is a bit aggressive. Maybe you read all the Gospels in a year.
Yeah, that
Like,
was a terrible example. Maybe it's
set a
like
goal
writing a poem, I don't know, but
but
setting
being
something long.
consistent. Yeah.
It's coming back to something over and over. So maybe they can't spend more than 3 minutes on it at a time, but if they build the consistent habit of doing that twice a day or every day or once a week, over time, that becomes a long-term consistent habit then.
Is there
So I
like
think it's a way to work in tandem together.
A Duolingo app, but for spiritual practices?
Yeah, it was called Rhythms of Grace or Rhythms or something, and I tried to download it. Do you remember that? Didn't we download that like a 2 years ago or something, and we did it for a while?
It sounds familiar.
It was like a Christian meditation thing, and I don't know. I didn't like it.
Your last point for sevens, I think, is a beautiful one to get them focused back on where is God, because explore any painful memories as they arrive. You don't have to sit there and make them come up, but when they do, can you see where, I think one of the things we learned, can you see where Jesus was in that moment, that he,
Yeah, now you shift your focus off the pleasurable possibilities.
yeah,
That's where the shift happens.
here's the pain as it arises. You don't have to make yourself think of painful things, but as they arise, can you, instead of reframing or shifting away from it, can you look at that and think, Jesus, where were you in that moment with me? That was hard, but where were you? And maybe seeing him there will really shift that worship that can flow as we begin to put him in his rightful place again. It's just different for all of us how that happens. But I think it can really produce some beautiful testimonies of worship.
I think your puppy has some opinions about this, and she seems really needy to know what her spiritual practice should be.
So too. I'm sorry, she's being a little whiny right now.
Hilarious.
She wants to go
So,
squawking for moles.
yeah. Well, I just want to reframe what you said there. I did not let sevens off the hook. I was working with their personalities, but then also encouraging them to step outside.
I appreciate that. I think that's good call.
Eights. Oh, eights. This is not going to come as a surprise. Eights need to also just stop once in a while. Their energy, they're goal oriented. They know where the power is. They know where the control is. That's their focus of attention. So what if they can shift to be still and recognize that they're not actually in control? If they can stop and go, you're the one that has the power.
Yeah. And
That's
really,
how they need to pause.
that's where they put God back in his rightful place, because
Yeah.
there's a trust that comes with that. That's a vulnerability to acknowledge that they're not the one on top. But when that happens, such a beautiful trust can flow from that place. Because now you're coming. It's like what we said about after, sorry, dog barking. After, why can't I say the word after?
Because you've been hanging out with me too long and pronunciation becomes a problem.
After God had created, he rested, and it was from that place that then we move into our stewardship. So it's almost, I think, kind of get this picture of this vassal lord kind of feudal system. It's hard to acknowledge that someone else is lord and you just get to manage, right? That's a hard position for Nate to put themselves in, except that that's not the kind of lord that God is. But they don't know that until they put themselves in a position to get to know him, and that takes some vulnerability.
I just realized that I actually had a pattern to all of these, like that I forgot about, which is that it was pulling them out of the repressed center, pulling them into a healthy step of the stress line. And then I don't remember what the third one was, but I'm seeing this because the second thing I put for fives goes back to that their stress line. I mean, for eights, it goes back to their stress line of five, which is to go research things.
Oh, yeah.
So what I'm saying to eights is they have a natural instinct to kind of know what's right, to know the facts, and then just to go gung ho, like learn a little bit, and then they're all in and they know everything
Yeah.
because they trust themselves. But they really could take a benefit from going to that five line a little bit and doing a little bit more research. And so what I propose to eights is read or listen to people outside of your current belief system sometimes. Not necessarily to change your mind. But eights like to be challenged because they want to know that what they believe holds firm. So
Yeah.
that's a really good practice for them, is to kind of branch out and maybe challenge what they believe and either double down then because it really helps them reinforce, or maybe it shifts them a little bit and pulls them out of that control they thought they had.
That's good. That's really good.
And then finally, eight's biggest fear is that vulnerability and that inner child that's afraid inside of them that they don't want to admit exists. So spending some time with that inner child, understanding what it's afraid of, and not re-fortifying whatever's protecting it.
Yeah, you'll start to recognize that God is your protector, and that's a beautiful place of worship and surrender at the same time.
And finally,
And
we have
finally,
our nines.
yes, we do.
Last but never least.
All right, schedule regular time to spend connecting with the Lord. Why do you schedule it, and why is it regular?
Nines have a tendency to get distracted. So if it's not a scheduled thing, it may slip through their fingers.
Yeah.
And they also have a hard time prioritizing. And they need consistency and routine, really. Like nines are part of that withdrawing stance with fours and fives. So scheduling that regular time and connecting with God in a consistent way is going to really pull up that repressed center for them.
Well, and now that I know your pattern, I can see that the next one has to do with going to their three space, work through a devotional or study with a friend. Or six space, sorry. Which one is that?
It's six. Yeah,
Six.
it's like that,
That
the
group.
community-minded part of it.
Yeah.
It
And they
gets
need
them
strategy
out
for
of their own brain a little bit and keeps them from like self-isolating and numbing, and there's a hand of accountability that goes along with that too.
Yeah, that's good. And then explore new spaces, outdoors or in. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, fours need to go to nature, I think, just to pull their heads out of themselves. Nines, I don't know that it's necessarily that they need to be outside. I just think nines need to get out of whatever their comfort zone is. So if that's their bedroom, or if that's their gym, or if that's the park they always go to, they need to go to a new space, whatever that looks like, once in a while, just to see the world from a different way, from a different view that they have seen before. Nines tend to get really comfortable.
Yeah, and so this kind of activates them because they're going to go to dormant in certain areas first because that's kind of their go-to. And also that doing dominant, doing repressed thing, just like we have with feelings with threes and thinkings with six, it's like they know how to be in their body, sort of, but not really in a productive way. And so going out to do something that's not routine, where they can't go on autopilot, kind of reawakens them to the new sensations and things that they maybe were missing in their everyday walk around the neighborhood, you know?
That's
And
good.
again, anything that kind of inspires like an awe and a wonder in us helps us to get God back to where he should be positioned in our life and just right sizes us in that. I think those are really good couple hints. This ended up being a little bit longer than we planned, but we got
I
through all
know.
nine.
Well, we're making up for being off the last few weeks. So this longer podcast goes out to Aunt Kelly and Julie Mason, who have been like missing our voices, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Well, and you also got to hear Gracie tonight, so you're all welcome.
I did. I don't know if anyone else really heard her that much.
Let's make a commitment to practicing some Sabbath rest in this next week, whether it happens on Sunday or not. I know for me, I've got to introduce a little bit each day, but let's all make a commitment to do that. I think it's
Ugh.
healthy practice.
Fine.
No, you don't get to end this like that. You're
Can
the
we report?
mastermind behind all this beautiful content.
I'm
Go
really good at
find
knowing what other people should do.
your shards of light. That's what you're
All
looking
right.
for.
Well, then we have to report back for the next
We will
podcast, just
report
real
back.
quickly and let you know how it went.
I will be resting daily
Oh,
and you will be looking for shards of light daily.
listeners, we should have a follow-up episode if enough of you do this. Go to Anchor. I don't know where it is, but we'll post it in the show notes. Go to our Anchor site and you can leave a voicemail. It has to be 59 seconds or less, but you can leave us a voice message right there on our Anchor site that would be able to drop into a podcast and play your messages. So tell us what you thought of these Sabbath practices and what have you practiced either since you saw my series on Instagram or since you heard us talk today. And I would love to play some of those. And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.